Oh, the Apostle by Grace by Brother John Mitchell. Chapter 27. It must have been as a lighter step than when he came to Corinth that Paul left the city behind him the following spring. Although there were still perils ahead, much had been accomplished during the 3 winter months he'd spent in Achaia. The turbulence in the Corinthian ecclesia had been quieted. All Galatia responded well. Rome had been enlightened, and the promised collections from all the ecclesias in Asia and in Europe to help Jewish brethren in Jerusalem had been honoured. Even as Paul packed his belongings to go to Palestine, they gathered around him the representatives of the various groups of ecclesias who'd been entrusted with the safe transportation of the money to its eastern destination. There were 7 of them in all: Sosipater, son of Pyrrhus of Berea; Aristarchus and Secundus of Thessalonica; Gaius of Derbe; Timothy of Lystra; Tychicus and Trophimus of Ephesus; and Luke of Philippi. One wonders what arrangements they made before setting off on so hazardous a journey. Did Paul, for example, draw up a list of the monies for which each was responsible, much in the same way that Ezra did when he and the priests brought the treasures of the temple from Babylon to Jerusalem? And were they able to lighten their load with currency of higher nominal value before setting out? For money can be burdensome in more senses than one. Corinth was a huge trading centre, and there must have been facilities there for the exchange of specie. One can only speculate. But since there is no report of losses when Jerusalem was reached, it must be assumed that the good hand of God was upon the bearers, just as it was upon Ezra and his companions. But Paul's could be a dangerous journey was brought home to him even before he set out. Either on the eve of his departure by sea from Centuria, or say some when he'd actually boarded the ship, he received information that caused him to change his mind. The Jews had laid a plot against him, which is generally interpreted as an attempt to assassinate him and to have him thrown overboard during the long voyage to Syria. This information caused Paul to change his plan completely and go partly by land and partly by sea, although that meant abandoning his original intention of trying to reach Jerusalem in time for the Feast of Passover in April. It also meant that for a variety of reasons, including calls and rest periods along the way, Paul and his companions did not always stay together. The first break came at Philippi, where Luke had natural connections, and Paul had a special relationship with the brethren and sisters in the local ecclesia. He decided to spend the Passover with them and then catch up with the others across the water in Troas. When he and Luke came to sail to Troas, however, either the weather or lack of transport caused a delay, with the result that a voyage normally taking only 2 days lasted 5, and the pressures began to mount to reach Jerusalem even by Pentecost in May. Nevertheless, Paul felt he could not ignore the spiritual needs of other precious ecclesias along the way, including that in Troas. The result was a further stay of 7 days, ending with a meeting that gave proof, if ever such was needed, of the total dedication of Paul to his beloved brethren and sisters. It happened on the Sunday evening before his departure, when the ecclesia was in the habit of holding its breaking of bread service, at a time when all its members, including slaves with unavoidable day duties, could attend. The meeting place was a large room at the top of a 3-story building, furnished with many oil lamps and suitable for the occasion. Sensing perhaps that this was an opportunity to hear their beloved apostle that was unlikely to recur, the members of the ecclesia turned up in force, eager to have his precious counsel. They were not disappointed. Unmindful of the passage of time, both speaker and hearer alike enjoyed things spiritual until past midnight, by which time the warm spring air in the room had become hot and oppressive with the fumes from the oil lamp. Perhaps because of this, or that the room was crowded, one youthful member of the audience decided he'd be more comfortable on the sill of one of the open windows, and there he sat until well past his normal bedtime, becoming more and more drowsy. It may have been when his nodding head came down upon his chest that he started up and lost his balance, or that he simply slumped. But the result was that, to the horror of those sitting near, he suddenly fell through the open window. Brethren near the stairway dashed down, fearful of what they might find on the pavement below. It was the worst. In anguish, they picked up the boy, dead, aghast that such a thing could have happened on so sacred an occasion. But even as the tears began to flow, Paul arrived, and after throwing himself on the youth and putting his arms around him, said, "Don't be alarmed, he's alive." Whereupon those tears of grief turned to tears of joy, as the brethren went back upstairs with the youth in their midst, a proof that all was well. Could there have been a more thankful beginning to the evening meal than that congregation had together, including, as the manner then was, a breaking of bread in memory of the sacrifice of their Lord? And that might have been thought sufficient for one night's assembly, but evidently it was not. Paul went on talking to the brethren and sisters until the break of day, and it was time for him to leave, thereby showing his love for them and his faithfulness to his master's charge, as well as his own remarkable stamina. And then, while Paul made his way out of town for the next stage of his journey, the ecclesia he was leaving behind took the young man home, greatly comforted by his restoration to life. As for Eutychus, he would no doubt sleep again, little dreaming his name would be recorded and remembered for when he fell out of a window, while the great apostle preached.